Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's cracking? Back in the saddle and recharged after a nice Thanksgiving weekend. Today's Daily Jungle is packed, starting with the absolutely crazy college football weekend. Number one Alabama and number two Miami both go down. And Tennessee ripped their head coaching job offer away from Greg Schiano after they had a deal with him. Allegedly, we had Andy Staples in. He broke the whole thing down. We were also all over Crabtree v. Tlaib round two and Kevin Harlan's epic call of the melee and Phillip Rivers' return to the jungle. The Chargers are back from the dead and they're in the hunt still in the AFC West even after starting 0-4. Alvy, this is one of our busiest weeks ever. Let's get to it. Let me ask you this. How was your Thanksgiving weekend? Because college football's weekend was pretty much insane. Number two, Miami, losing to 4-7 Pitt on Friday. Number one, Alabama, losing to number six, Auburn on Saturday. A ton of coaches losing their jobs all weekend. Brett Bielema, Mike Riley, Kevin Sumlin, Todd Graham out, to name just a few. Chip Kelly to UCLA, Dan Mullen to Florida, Jimbo might be headed to A&M, and Greg Schiano going to Tennessee. Well, actually, maybe not. Actually, definitely not. Yesterday afternoon, Tennessee and Schiano backed out of a memorandum of understanding that they had a few hours earlier. Whatever the hell that is. The Mike Price era at Alabama thinks that was a short run. New York Jets head coach Bill Belichick thought that was over quickly. Notre Dame legend George O'Leary cannot believe the way this went down. Although technically, Schiano was never officially introduced as the head coach, he can't really join that elite club. He never officially had the job. However, now he's got a club all to his own. Because when word started to come out that he was going to be the next head coach of the Volunteers, a segment of Vol fans went ballistic online and on The Rock on Tennessee's campus. Fact is, anytime you hire a head coach, there are probably going to be fans who don't like the move. And any guy who was hired at Tennessee whose name does not rhyme with Ron Rudin was going to be a disappointment to a lot of their fans. Never mind that there was no way in hell Ron Rudin was coming. But you know it's going to be a major disappointment to the Vol fans who thought that he would. But there's disappointed, and then there's the reaction to Schiano, which went viral in a hurry. Don't think that social media does not impact or influence agendas. Because the backlash focused on the belief that Schiano, a former assistant at Penn State, knew of Jerry Sandusky's abuse of children. Now, and this is key, if that's the case, if he did know about it and he did nothing, it is beyond reprehensible. And I completely understand why Vol fans would be angry. However, there is a problem with that. We don't know that he knew. Only Schiano himself knows. Or as Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports, who covered that case as closely as anybody, points out, Schiano's name came up as a, quote, non-specific allegation based on a secondhand account recalled at least a decade after the fact, end quote. Charges were never filed against Schiano. He was never sued by anybody, and he has adamantly denied knowing anything. However, the notion of Schiano as part of a Sandusky cover-up spread like wildfire online, even getting politicians involved, and culminating with, quote, Schiano covered up child rape at Penn State, end quote, being spray-painted on that giant rock on campus. Listen, there may be plenty of reasons not to want this guy as your head coach, starting with the stories that came out of his time when he was the head coach of the Buccaneers. But if your opposition to him is that he covered up child rape at Penn State, you better have proof. When you start making statements like that, you better have more than a non-specific allegation based on a secondhand account recalled at least a decade after the fact. But the truth is, this is on the school. It's on Tennessee, Hard to know which look is worse, hiring Schiano or bailing on him when social media erupted. The school had to know about that Penn State connection. So how did they mismanage this whole thing so poorly? And how did the school not know its own fan base? And again, don't get this twisted. I'm not saying Schiano is a great coach, or that he was a perfect fit, or even a good fit for Tennessee, or that Vol fans should have been happy about him as a head coach, or that Tennessee made the right move in the first place. But they should have known that this was possible when they went down that road with him. Exactly what were they thinking? What did they think was going to happen? And I'm not going to argue that he was the right man for that job. I completely understand if a school wouldn't steer clear of Schiano because of even the faintest connection to the Penn State investigation. But if you do decide to hire him, losing control of that story and bailing on him a few hours later looks even worse. Then again, if I was that guy and I saw that reaction, I wouldn't have wanted that gig either. And now that's Tennessee's problem. Good luck trying to get somebody else to walk into that dumpster fire on wheels. May as well just rehire Butch Jones. At least he knows how to handle a press conference. I guess what I'm getting at is, there are plenty of reasons not to hire Greg Schiano, but if you're going to do it, do it the right way. And that was all wrong. Andy Staples is back. Andy, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Morning, Jim. I'm good. I never thought I'd see a fan-based veto coaching hire, but there's a first time for everything.
And it happened. Let's get into it. So a lot to cover, but starting right there, Greg Schiano in Tennessee. I mean, we have time to unpack it, but initially, right off the top, Andy, how would you summarize that entire situation in either a single word or one sentence?
Wow. I mean, I couldn't stop watching it yesterday because I've never seen anything like that before, and it was really interesting to watch kind of the rank-and-file fan who would not have had this voice 10 years ago, but now has a conduit to the athletic director, to the university chancellor, to all these people in real time. And they said, this is not what we want. They said, if this is the football program you're going to sell us, we don't want to buy it. And Tennessee, I think, wisely listened to its customers.
Andy Staples joining us. I mean, to that point, Andy, it was so clear that a vocal section of that fan base did not want Greg Schiano to be their coach, and they made their feelings known as soon as the MOU came out. How did the athletic department then not know this ahead of that MOU?
Well, because they didn't float any trial balloons. When you think you've got a hire that might be somewhat controversial or that the fan base won't like because they don't think their person's a good football coach, then you kind of float it out there first. You leak it to somebody, hey, we're looking at this guy. Maybe you write a story about him, see what happens. And they didn't do that. And had they done that 2 days before they hired him, I think they would have gotten this reaction and realized, oh, we might want to move on. And here's the other crazy part of it. No one was clamoring to hire Greg Schiano. They weren't racing against anybody to get him. So they could have sat on that for a few days and looked at some other candidates. What they were hoping would happen, they wanted to hire Dan Mullen from Mississippi State. But the thing was, Mullen was waiting to see if Florida would come to him because he worked at Florida. The Florida athletic director, Scott Strickland, used to be Mullen's boss at Mississippi State. And Mullen was waiting to see, hey, Florida's a better job. Maybe that one will be available to me as well. And Chip Kelly turned down Florida. Florida got the smoke signal from Scott Frost that he wasn't going to be coming there. And then it did fall to Dan Mullen. So all of a sudden, Tennessee is scrambling. And they went and immediately went after a guy that nobody else was really trying to hire.
Andy Staples joining us. All right, then. If nobody was trying to hire this guy, then why not float that trial balloon? Why didn't they do that?
That was a mistake. They've made a couple tactical mistakes in this thing. One of the things they should have done about 3 weeks ago was stamped down all the things we call rumors. And that's any rumor that John Gruden is going to be the next head coach of Tennessee. It's kind of become a running joke because the last three times Tennessee has hired a football coach, there's been this rampant rumor on the internet that John Gruden will be the next guy. Well, it's not going to be John Gruden. He's not giving up a job that pays more than the Tennessee football coach job pays to go talk to 17-year-olds 8 hours a day. He's not going to do that. So what the administration should have done is put a pin in that pretty quickly, and they could have had some fun with it. I mean, most of the Tennessee fan base thinks the groomers are a joke. There are a few people who actually bought them. But just get that out of the way. Don't let that become a thing. And then when you do have a serious candidate, if you don't think he's a slam dunk, and anybody who's paid attention to college football would know that Greg Schiano was not going to be considered a slam dunk hire, you float it out there just to test it, and they didn't test it.
Clones, I need a minute to talk to you about Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter jungle. Stamps.com, never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. That's Stamps.com. Andy Staples joining us once again. Andy, so one more thought about that. Do you think that the fan base did not want Schiano to be their coach because of the Penn State situation or because he's Greg Schiano?
I think it's more for football reasons. You know, they latched on to the Penn State situation, which, you know, the thing about it is that how Schiano has denied it completely. He was never investigated for it. He can't disprove a negative. Now there's no way to find out whether it's true or not. I think it was more for football reasons, honestly. One of the things that kept popping up and stuff I saw is that one of his last Rutgers teams got completely shelled by a Butch Jones Cincinnati team. And that probably was the thing that really sent a lot of people over the edge. Like, this guy got beat up by Butch Jones, the guy we just fired. And the other thing about it is, personality-wise, I don't think Schiano would have been a very good fit in Knoxville. Knoxville is a fishbowl unlike most other sports fishbowls. I mean, it is up there with some of the most pressure-packed jobs in sports. The Tennessee head football coach, every word he utters is parsed like the freaking Dead Sea Scrolls. So Greg Schiano, who is basically a defensive-minded, more aggressive Butch Jones, was not going to fare well in that environment anyway. So John Curry, the athletic director, may wind up thanking these people in 5 years if the person he winds up hiring works out.
If he's still there to make that hire, right?
Right, exactly. But that's the weird thing about this, Jim. You know, everybody's on John Curry today. They're going to fire him, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. If he hires a coach who loses, that coach and John Curry will eventually get fired. If he hires a coach who wins, that coach and John Curry will eventually get raises. That is college sports in a nutshell. You are as successful as the football coach you hire, and that's it.
Andy Staples joining us. All right, before I let you go, Auburn beat Alabama on Saturday, and this time it was not with smoke and mirrors. They flat out beat them, straight up. So how good is this Auburn team right now? And then really, how good is the Alabama team?
This is an Auburn team that nobody in the country wants to play. Clemson beat them in the early part of the season, but Auburn's defense limited Clemson's offense very well. Auburn's offense was still working the kinks out, and Clemson's defense sacked them 11 times. If they play again, and that's a distinct possibility that they may play again, I think that game would turn out a little bit differently. I don't know who would win it, but I think Auburn would make it a much more interesting game because they talent-wise stack up with everybody really well. Alabama is a different story. They've really banged up at linebacker. I still think they're very good, and the thing is, if they wind up sneaking into the playoff, let's say TCU beats Oklahoma or Ohio State beats Wisconsin and the committee decides to make Alabama the number four team, they're going to be healthy by the time they play that semifinal game, they're going to be a better team than they were on the day of the Auburn game. So if Alabama sneaks in at number four and I'm the one seed, I'm like, oh, come on. Mm. Give me a break.
We're talking Andy Staples, right?
They'd be a scary team.
If they sneak in, if they can get in. Now, there's no way that you come on this show the Monday after Thanksgiving and we don't talk some food. You recently hit up the Zombie Pig Barbecue and you had the four meat platter. Where is that?
No.
Talk
Columbus,
to me. What?
Georgia, but get the three meat platter.
Okay, the three meat.
I got the four meat to test it so you don't have to. don't get brisket outside of Texas unless it's one of a few very select places. So, yeah, skip the brisket, get the pulled pork, get the ribs, get the pulled chicken, and then ask for extra slices of white bread because you want to turn that pulled pork and pulled chicken into sandwiches. And just like three sandwiches, eat your ribs, you're a happy camper.
All right, so turn that four-meat platter into a three-meat platter. What did you do for Thanksgiving? What did you eat?
I ate roast turkey, fried turkey, mac and cheese, mashed potatoes and gravy, pumpkin pie, a la mode, of course. You got to go a la mode on the pumpkin pie.
Clearly.
And just multiple helpings of all of that. It is the turkey especially. They actually banned me and the family from cutting the turkey. I used to be the guy who cut the turkey, and then they realized I would eat all the skin, and then I would eat basically cut a slice for the plate that everybody would take from and cut a slice for myself. So I was actually banned from cutting the turkey this year. I had to watch NFL football.
Yeah, so, bro, what? I was going to say, what do you contribute to that party?
Dazzling commentary about the Cowboys game.
There you
That's pretty much it.
Going into yesterday's Denver-Oakland game, I think that three things were clear. The Broncos were circling the drain. The Raiders needed a win to stay alive. And Michael Crabtree had some unfinished business with Aqib Talib. Now, you recall that the Raiders receiver and the Broncos DB got into it in Week 17 last season. Remember, Talib ripped Crabtree's chain off his neck during that game. Remember that. You might also remember how Talib explained the move as, quote, "He's just been wearing that chain all year, and it's just been growing on me. I said if he wears that chain in front of me, I'm going to snatch it off. So he wore it in front of me, so I had to snatch it off," end quote. That's the way Talib saw it, that he didn't have a choice last year. If Michael Crabtree was going to wear a chain, he was going to snatch it off. That's just the way it is. Crabtree wore a chain, he snatched it off. I guess rules are rules, which means there was no way that there was not going to be payback for that. The only thing is, the sequel is rarely as good as the original. We all know that. It's typically like reheating old leftovers and hoping that it tastes okay. Except that was not the case this time. This was Godfather 2 to last year's Godfather. And just 3 minutes into yesterday's game, it was on. And by it, I mean this.
More Lynch. We've seen a lot already. Into the pile he goes. Trying to dig his way. Wolf among them, a couple down there. And Pecco with his hands right around his ankles. Oh, we have a fight on the other side. Look at this. After Crabtree, helmets being thrown. Talib grabbed it off. Referee is down. And look at holding on to his ribs.
That started with the block. That was Crabtree on a key Talib.
Look, we got another one right
look
here.
Look at this.
Oh, and a swing
right
there.
This is crazy because now you're going to get ejected from the game. I mean, this is just selfish.
Wow.
Selfish. What you call selfish, I call awesome. Selfish, awesome, chaotic, whatever you want to call it. That was complete chaos. Now, it started with Crabtree blocking Talib down the field, off the field, into a cameraman, and then into another innocent bystander on the sideline. If it ended there, it probably would have been a 15-yard penalty against Crabtree. But maybe a message would have been sent. But it didn't end there because Talib was simply not going to accept that. Of course. Instead, it was only getting started. Talib then gets a reversal, and he's on top of Crabtree with more Broncos racing in. Bodies were flying. Punches were thrown. Helmets were bouncing. Penalty flags dotted the field. Guys chasing each other. Crabtree gets tossed. Talib gets tossed and was escorted off the field by Marshawn Lynch. And then somewhere in the middle of that, Raiders lineman Gabe Jackson hit a referee and he got tossed. Oh, and it looks like Tlaib might have gotten Crabtree's chain again. Maybe. Possibly. Probably. And as it turns out, it might not have even started on that play. Broncos Pro Bowler Chris Harris Jr. said Crabtree went after him the play before, and he punched him in the stomach. Quote, I have never seen that in the NFL. Today, he just came out wanting to fight. He didn't want to play football. It was the second play of the game. It was a run play. I was playing man. I wasn't even doing anything. He just came in there, was like, bam, hit me right in the middle of the stomach, and I just lost my breath. End quote. Like, he didn't even want to play football. He just wanted to fight. Yeah, I'm not even totally sure what Crabtree was looking to do yesterday, but based on those two plays, I think he was looking to at least send a message and then take an early shower. Clearly, he will go, and he did. But let's take a step back. You hate to have something like that happen in a game, period. But if it is going to happen in a game, I want Kevin Harlan on the call because nobody describes insanity better than Kevin Harlan. Let's run that back one more time.
Trying to dig his way. Wolf among them, a couple down there. And Pecco with his hands right around his ankles. Oh, we have a fight on the other side. Look at this. After Crabtree, helmets being thrown. Tlaib grabbed it off. Referee is down and look at holding on to his ribs.
That started with the block. That was Crabtree on a key Tlaib.
We have another one right here.
Look at this.
Oh, and a swing right there.
This is crazy because now you're going to get ejected from the game. I mean, this is just selfish.
Wow.
Now, that's a masterpiece of announcing. And you can put yesterday's call right up there with this legendary moment.
Third and four. Looks into the nickel of San Francisco in the secondary. Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
that
man.
Here comes the blue coat.
Oh,
Kevin.
They got him.
Here comes
They're coming
the blue
from the
coats.
Left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line. Oh, that was the most exciting thing to happen tonight.
No doubt. Unbelievable call. Or what about his trademark dunk call?
With no regard for...
With no regard for what, Alvin?
With no regard for human life!
That's what I thought. So, the Raiders had to have that win, and they got it. And if they had to have that fight, we had to have Kevin Harlan call it. And we got that. And apparently you can add wearing a chain in an NFL game to our list of reasons to go. You spit in somebody's face, that's a reason to go. You insult somebody's race or religion, that's a reason to go. Somebody insults or threatens you or your loved ones, an absolute reason to go. And wearing a chain in an NFL game is a reason to go, or at least it is if you're Aqib Tlaib. One of the rare sequels that lived up to the original. And the Broncos have now lost 7 straight. Raiders still alive. We are joined by Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers. Philip, it's good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Good morning. Glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back, Philip. Thank you. You had that monster game on Thanksgiving where you completed 27 to 33 passes for 434 yards, 3 TDs. I know you've probably already turned the page and you're thinking about Cleveland, but if you take a look back at that win over Dallas, what sticks out to you the most about that game?
Well, I don't know that it could have gone much better than that. I mean, it was a game that I know a lot of my teammates as well. I circled when you saw the schedule come out. You get to play on Thanksgiving Day at Dallas. It doesn't get much bigger than that in a regular season. And so we'd been looking forward to that one. And then the fact that we had started to turn it around, starting 0-4 and dug ourselves a huge hole. And then we won 5 of our last 7 going to Dallas on Thanksgiving. We knew that was a big game before coming home to Cleveland and Washington, trying to dig ourselves back in this AFC West hunt. And it was just an all-around team win. The defense played well. Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, and the offense had a big day. The guys up front, now that's 2 consecutive games without giving up a sack. We just put it all together, and it certainly felt good. You're right, we have turned the page, but that was a special one on Thursday.
Philip Rivers joining us. You mentioned the 0-4 start. You've won 2 straight. You've won 5 of 7, and you fought your way right back into the playoff race. So how proud are you of everybody in that locker room for not throwing in the towel after the first 4 games?
gosh, it was a tough first four too. And you talk about losing Denver down to the wire with a field goal opportunity. Miami in the same way. Philadelphia, who now is the hottest team in the NFL, it was 26-22. Had a chance there, 26-24, excuse me. And then Kansas City was a one score game, and I had probably one of my worst games in the last handful of years. So we were in all those games. But start 0-4, I think you got to give credit to A. Lynn too. As far as I think, it starts at the top, and he didn't flinch, he didn't panic, but yet he said, "Hey, we got to get this thing straightened out. Now we're 0-4. We don't have any more time to mess around." And the guys just kept playing and kept playing and kept playing because we believed we were right there. It wasn't one of those, "Man, we're terrible, and I don't know if we're going to win a game." It was, well, if we can just find a way to win one game, then we know what we're capable of doing. We can get hot, and we've done that thus far, but. We still have a long way to go. I mean, we're excited, but we are sitting at 5-6, and we still are climbing out of that hole. But one game back with five to play and everything in front of us, we certainly have given ourselves a chance.
You've given yourself a chance. You've got all that right in front of you. So at this point, how would you describe the identity of this group?
Well, I think you know, with Anthony Lynn coming in as head coach and his track record of places he's been and what they've done offensively, is they've been able to run the football. And I think if you look at our track record over the years, when we've had our best years, we've ran the football well. And certainly we have playmakers on the outside, and we've been able to throw it. But in our best years, we've been able to run it. So I think he wanted to bring that attitude with him, along with what we've had that attitude in a sense. We've been best when we've had our balance with Ken Wisenhunt and what we've done here. So, but I think at the same time, when you're learning, you're new together. You're building trust. You're learning exactly how each other's style fits and how you see this thing coming to. And so I think we're working through that some early in the year. I think our identity right now, I mean, I know what it is defensively. I mean, they are playing fast and going to get the football and getting turnovers. Offensively, I think it's, let's get the ball in our best players' hands. And, you know, whether that means 40 rush attempts one week with Melvin Gordon and Eckler, or whether it means throw it to Hunter Henry and Keenan Allen, Travis Benjamin and Tyron Williams and Antonio Gates, throw it to those guys 40 times. I think it's just it's get the ball in our best players' hands, and that can change week to week. We've done that really well the last 2 weeks, and it's been our best two offensive performances.
L.A. Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers is our guest. You know, after the Cowboys game, you said, quote, "This was a little bit of not so fast, hold on, don't try to run me off yet." The fact is, you've never, ever struck me or pretty much anybody else as somebody who's short on motivation, but is there a little part of you that is looking to prove anyone wrong who thinks that it might be time for you to move on?
Well, I think, I really mean this, I don't really pay attention to what's said out there on the outside, but I think you also lie as a competitor if you just say that you don't hear any of it. We all are human. And I just know that I hadn't had my best year the last few years, but maybe at the same time, I'd love to sit down and watch every game with who says that and go, there's a lot of still dang good football in there. But bottom line is, it's about winning and helping our team win, which I haven't done well enough. So I can own up to that. I think I don't know if this is proving them wrong, but it was just a little bit of that. You know, and that was responding to a question of, was there more motivation because of Thanksgiving Day? And the answer to that was no. I want to try to play well every week. But it was a little bit of an opportunity to say, hey, easy now. Easy with the Chargers, time to move on. I feel like I have some good football left physically. I feel as good as I've felt in a few years. And I think our team has really got a chance. I just really like the makeup of this team. And I think we have a chance. Now, obviously, you know, we all know what, you know, with that, everybody has a chance. It's a matter of going out there and doing it, but I'm excited about where we are, and I hope I have plenty. I know I have plenty in the tank, and I hope I have plenty to give right here in L.A.
Philip Rivers joining us for a few more moments. Now, you connected with Keenan Allen 11 times for 172 yards and a touchdown. He was talking about how the two of you and the offense in general got into a real groove. In 5 days from last Sunday to Thursday, you've hit him 23 times for 331 yards and three touchdowns. So how would you describe the connection that you have with him right now?
he's an awesome player. I mean, he is an awesome football player. I think too, physically, he's great. I mean, you see how his ability to create separation in one-on-one matchups. To me, that's what separates good receivers from great receivers. Is this guy is covering you? How can you find a way to get separation? And he's great in the short area quickness, and he's better after the catch. I think people finally saw that, than people have given him credit for over the years. I think too, though, Jim, people maybe don't know about the guy. I like to tease him sometimes offensively and say, "Hey, you're the second smartest guy out here when we trot out on the field." Because I kid him by giving myself a pat on the back, saying, "I'm pro, you can't have the title." I'm joking with that, but at the same time, giving him a compliment because he is so smart. I mean, the guy can tell you what everybody on the field is supposed to do. He knows every receiving position. He understands when I start to explain something like, "Hey, I may have to bend you around him." He knows what I'm saying. It's that part as a quarterback is what, gosh, really excites me, because I go, goodness gracious, this guy, it makes it even easier. Not only does he know how to get open, and physically is he really good, but when his mind is on another level, it really can make it dangerous. And I think that's what you've really seen him ascend to, that really top-tier group of wide receivers in the last 2 years.
Philip Rivers, my guest. Philip, one last thought. Prior to the Buffalo game, you were in the concussion protocol for the first time in your career. I'm curious, what made you self-report the symptoms, and then what was that entire experience like for you?
Well, I tell you, it was scary. I mean, it really was. I wrestled with the whole self-reporting, to be honest with you, because I just never felt that way before. You know, I think you've heard the old bell rung phrase that gets so used by all athletes, especially in our sport, and I think I can say that has certainly happened. But I never felt the way I felt before. I don't really know any way to describe it. I think I just, after visiting my wife and just where I was, I go, why not? You know, yeah, you're essentially taking it out of your hands. Certainly, I've been thankful to be out there for 190 in a row or whatever it is. But I just said, gosh, it's just I would rather report, be able to knock out all the tests all week, and then trot out there feeling safe and confident, and allow my wife and family to feel confident that I'm okay, than to say, take it in my own hands, I'm fine, and talk myself into being fine, and then let's say something else pops up a week or two later, and then I'm backtracking and going, well, I didn't feel right after that Jacksonville game either. You know, then you're really in a bind, and who knows what happens there. So I just, from the neck down, I feel like I'm pretty reckless and willing to pretty much do anything, but I'd never felt that way, and it was a little scary for me. I'm thankful that, you know, when I told some people, they go, that's the first time you felt like that. I go, yeah, it is. So I'm thankful that I haven't dealt with what maybe many guys have had to deal with, but I went the cautious and safe route, and thankfully everything was good, and I felt great the last 2 weeks.
I mean, it's obviously the right thing, and that's so interesting. Can you say really quickly, were the symptoms, were they different? How was it different this time than other times when you've, quote, had your bell rung?
Well, I think in other times I've had a bell rung, it's literally been that 10 seconds and it's over, you know. And this was just a little bit, the only way I can describe it is just a little bit of a fuzziness, that just kind of wouldn't stop, you know. And then I found myself a little bit more emotional. You know, I think it was just like, goodness gracious. And then some of it, I think, was my own self probably wondering if I'm all right. You know, I mean, I think some of that was, am I okay? Is that blurry over there? You know, so I think it was just, again, it was just something I knew I didn't feel right. That's the best way to describe it. And come early in that next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, I felt pretty good. So then I thought, gosh, did I overreact? But I thought, you know what? Good. Let's take all the tests and do all the things and meet with our doctors and independent guys. And when they can all go, you're good to go, and I feel good to go, then that'll give me the confidence to trot back out there and stand in there and play the way I always play.
Go to the phones. Seattle, Tyler. Good to have you, Tyler. What's up?
Hey, Romy. Thanks for the vine. Quickly want to thank you for the Charger love, man. Jungle Karma's been treating us so well. I want to get into my take. You know, I got a short one about San Diego so-called fans. You know, back in election months, back in November, Spanos gave y'all a shot to keep the team with that city funding vote. 30% is sad, man. That was more sad than 4-12 and 5-11. You know what? I'm glad he ripped the team from you guys, man. L.A. might have some better fans. Time will tell. You know what? if you're a true fan, you're going to stick with the team. I won a war Matt in L.A. I'm not here to rip on clones. I love clones. I am a clone. The war Matt in L.A. and unwar people who don't war Matt in L.A. Jim, I'm out. Catch up later.
Tyler in Seattle, rack him. Y'all rack him. I mean, who else is going to war Matt in L.A.? Tyler in Seattle just did. And he cracked the Charger fans for not doing more to keep their team in town. Let's go to San Diego. Connor, you're next. Connor, good morning. How are you? What's up?
Epic. Thanks, Romy. Yeah, you're right. We do have Cleveland next, and that is a really concerning matchup, being that I am a lifelong Charger fan. I've seen that story before. But, yeah, that last caller had a really sweet take. Yeah, I really like L.A. fans are going to be better than San Diego fans. Yeah, they got a great track record of showing up late and leaving early to the teams that they're so loyal to. But, yeah, real quick, Rome, down here in SD, it's a civil war. Half my lifelong Charger friends are now Raider fans. I went to a wedding. My buddy I've known since kindergarten. I roll up to the house we have, and he's just decked out in Raider gear. I didn't have much to say to that. So they're all defectors, and we've moved on. But I'm still loyal to my soil. I'm sticking with the Charger fans, and I'm sticking with the Chargers. And the Spanoses are still rats. You know, they're still kooks. Thanks for the vine, late.
Got to rack him, too. Got to rack him, too. The Spanos are, quote, still rats and still kooks. Jeff in San Diego. Jeff, what's going on? How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Rome. How are you, sir?
I'm great. What's on your mind?
Lifelong Charger fan, born and raised. I was born at the top of the hill from Jack Murphy Stadium. The Raiders suck and the Chargers do still rule. Gene Klein would be rolling in his grave right now if he understood what's going on. The Chargers, I loved your Philip Rivers interview a little bit ago. The Chargers are going to win out. We might lose in the first round of the playoffs. This goes out to the Detolas. This goes out to Raider Mike. This goes out to Ira Craig. This goes out to everyone. Chargers rule. Raiders suck. Good night, Al.
You know, because he's old school, I'll rack him too. Have we ever racked three calls in a row? Did we just do that, Alvin? Did that just happen? Did we go back to back to back? I don't think we've ever racked three calls in a row. Yeah, Rome, I don't know that we've ever racked two calls in a row. I don't know that I've ever racked a call. We go to San Bernardino. Javier. Javier, you're next. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Jimmy?
What's up, Javier?
Hey, so I'm a longtime Charger fan. I just started listening to your show recently. Absolutely love it. Got addicted to your podcast. But I'm a Chargers fan. I've been a lifelong Chargers fan for a long time, since I was pretty young. And so I went to that Raiders and Chargers game last year. So I'm talking about the Chargers movie. Okay, so I walk into this stadium, and I'm giving the Chargers a fair 10% Chargers fans, 90% Raiders fans. So if I'm an owner and I walk into a stadium like that, you're not supporting my team. The other team's fans are killing the stadium. So how can you be upset as San Diego fans that he decided to pull the team and move away? Now you guys want to burn jerseys? Now you guys want to be fans? All of a sudden, where were you at when 1-15, 3-13 season? When we were absolutely terrible. You know what I mean? That's my take on it is, hey, you know what? Do what you got to do. Take your franchise. Move somewhere else. I'll still be a fan and follow him to the day I die. Charger Nation, baby, all the way.
All right, so what do I do with Javier? I'm going to rack him. It's a guy with a take, man. A strong take. A straight take. We're rack 4 him. For 4. Let's go to Los Angeles. Matt, what's going on, brother?
Romy, yo, the sun is shining. Thanks for the vine. Shout out to my cousin, Tyler in Seattle, the best jungle rep not named Matt in L.A. But second off, Romy, you touched on one thing, a great weekend. And that great weekend came because of your show, The Jungle. So I got to give you props, Mr. Jim Rome, and one Mr. Joseph Vendetta, a.k.a. the Clint Eastwood in the box, the sub-pimp when you are out, as you should be. Thank you I witnessed the best damn show I've ever seen in my life, bro. Better than Cypress Hill, better than Ice Cube or Tina Marie in their primes. And that was Guns N' Roses, baby. Guns N' effing Roses at the Forum. Romy, it was off the hook, dude. My ears were ringing for hours. And thanks to the jungle, man, hey, all of you clones could do this. Just have a take and don't suck. The real jungle legends were out there. Duff, Slash, Axel, bringing that heat like a bonfire, yo. Hey, so to get on the other topic, Romy, Raiders in San Diego. Hey, it's a collision course. The Civil War of the Jungle, old school, like everybody was saying. But you know what? I got a lot of respect for San Diego fans that ride with them. I have no respect for those that jump ship. Unless you go to Raiders gear, then you get love. But, hey, man, San Diego fan, you got to look yourself in the mirror. There were plenty of chances for you guys to get a new stadium made. Yeah, the Spanos might be a goat herder and all that crap, but you know what? He gave you guys multiple chances. So, unwar Scott and Billy Ray pushing Charger fans.
Oh, no. Man.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
The streak is over at 4. That's it for now. Daily Jungle Down, the Jim Rome podcast, rolling tape shortly. Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey is my guest for episode 15, one of the most interesting executives in sports. So it's sure to be another excellent pod. It's going to drop tomorrow. Check back then. See you next time. I'm out.